following is a taped interview with Dr. Stanley Monteith interviewing Dr. Len Horowitz, the author of Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola.
Hi, Stan. How are you?
I'm fine. I appreciate so much your being with us tonight. I appreciate so much your sending me the questions. And why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? Because although you have a degree in dentistry, you also have a lot of academic credentials as well, and you've been in academia, so you certainly have more than just simple dental school knowledge of science. Why don't you introduce yourself, tell our listeners about yourself, and then how you got involved in researching the background of the AIDS virus.
Sure. I'm sure all your listeners can recall the case of the Florida dentist who infected his patients with the AIDS virus, Dr. Acker, and one of his victims was Kimberly Bregalis. Well, I became the chief investigator of that case. I was a dentist, and I was at the time of the case when it broke. I was the professional consultant, the main professional consultant for the largest dental and medical catalog supplier in the United States, and they had asked me to develop patient educational literature to help allay people's fear of going into dental offices. And I'm sure everybody can remember how much afraid everybody was following that case. So I began to investigate that case, and one thing led to another. I realized that the Centers for Disease Control had covered up a lot of information in that case, and then ultimately it led me to investigate the FBI's research literature on serial killers so that I could begin to cross-match what I suspected Dr. Acker's personality profile was with the serial killers that the FBI studied. And I learned from the FBI why serial killers do what they do, and it had has to do with revenge and power and control. And the dentist in Florida, his principal vendetta was against the government. And I fell into the main motive why apparently he did what he did. It had to do with he believed he was dying from a virus that the government had created.
And, of course, your contention is he intentionally gave it to his six victims.
Right. So, and that was what I published in three scientific reports in an earlier book called Deadly Innocence.
Okay, fine.
So that's how I began. Now, what I got a hold of was extraordinary. It was a 1970 Department of Defense appropriations request for 1970 funding for $10 million for the development of immune system destroying agents for germ warfare.
Okay, now you had that fax to me in its entirety. It came in over the fax here yesterday. Did you send that to me?
Actually, no, I didn't. I wonder who did.
I don't know, but anyway, I can ask. I can verify. I've read the entire report. I've seen it elsewhere, but I was going to thank you for sending it to me, but somebody sent it to me
in
its entirety, and it really is an amazing document. And those of you who would like this, just the one page where Dr. MacArthur talks about the fact that they actually had thought and considered developing a virus that would destroy the immune system, that there would be no ability for the human body to counteract. You sent us this free self-addressed stamped envelope or a self-addressed stamped envelope and just request that specifically, and we'll get it to you. But pick up the story from there. You got hold of the testimony of Dr. MacArthur, and then
right.
What happened?
And then that sat on my desk for 8 months, and I was just horrified to think that it could be real.
It really is awfully hard to contemplate that anything could be that evil.
Exactly.
And this was the problem I've had really accepting Dr. Strecker's thesis, or even initially even considering discussing this. But as I begin to contemplate it a little bit more, sometimes we have to face reality and not the way the world is, the way we wish it were. So pick it up from there.
Well, that's where I began, and that led me into 3 years of investigation into that document, into what happened to the $10 million, into where that document came from, who ordered it. Ultimately, I learned that it was Henry Kissinger's order to Melvin Laird in 1968 when he became National Security Advisor under Richard Nixon. He almost immediately told Laird that he wanted to have him do a reanalysis of America's biological weapons capabilities. And Laird came back with a report that Kissinger went over in detail, and he noted that apparently the CIA had disinformed Laird that the Russians were ahead of us in the biological weapons race, And he selected the option of developing these types of immune system destroying agents.
I see. Okay.
So that's where that document comes from. It's legitimate, and it was taken out of the congressional record. Robert Strecker's brother, Ted Strecker, got a hold of it. And then I then researched the money, and where ultimately that money went is largely to a company by the name of Litton Bionetics.
Okay.
And those of you on the West Coast know pretty much Litton Industries. They had a major medical subsidiary called Litton Bionetics Research Laboratories that worked with Dr. Robert Gallo at the National Cancer Institute intimately, and they had developed numerous AIDS-like and Ebola-like viruses under NCI contract and military contracts. And that's what I published in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola. I published the contracts, including how much the people were paid. And I published just the most horrifying things. I mean, you really can't even imagine what they did with the various viruses from the various animals and how they recombined them. And that's what I published.
Okay, now, what basically, what's the relationship between the simian virus, the monkey virus, and the AIDS virus?
Well, there is a relationship. We're not absolutely sure. As a matter of fact, I'm right now... I got a call from Robert Gallo about a week ago, and he presented about four objections to my thesis. I presented this thesis that it's a man-made virus, a laboratory creation, at the 11th International Conference on AIDS, at which time I really confronted Dr. Gallo with some very hard questions about whether he feels concerned that his early research might have given rise to these types of viruses. Well, he responded, and now I'm kind of responding to him, and I'm answering that exact question. To this very day, although there's a lot of genetic evidence that suggests that the AIDS virus, human AIDS virus, developed from the simian immunodeficiency virus, there's still nothing definite. I mean, even the two chief experts in that field, Dr. Myers and Dr. Pavlakis, that wrote in Jay Levy's book, The Retroviridae, on the subject of evolution of these viruses, they themselves state that it's possible, it's not definite, that the AIDS virus evolved from the monkey viruses. I am clear that if it had come from a monkey virus, it wasn't from a monkey virus that was left alone in the wild.
Okay, what you're suggesting is that they altered it because we have an HIV-1, HIV-2, and HIV-2 is almost identical. It is a simian virus, which HIV-1 is somewhat different than a simian virus. And I think for our listener out there, the foreword to the book is written by a professor at USC who I personally know. He's at University of Southern California. W. John Martin, M.D., Ph.D. We've had Dr. Martin on our program in the past, and he is a highly respected scientist. He has both an M.D. and a Ph.D., and the fact he would write the foreword to this book gives it a great deal of credence in my mind, because this is one of the unusual and more talented scientists we have in America, and one who's willing to stand against the crowd and say, there is a problem, and we better get to the bottom of it. Have you talked about your theory to Dr. Martin in detail?
Oh, yes. We're in touch constantly right now. As a matter of fact, I'm actually working here, and I wanted to get a draft of a paper off to Dr. Martin. We spoke yesterday. Right now, what we're doing, because this information is so horrifying, we felt that it would be best to put it into the scientific arena before really even going to public in a major way with it. And so what we've developed is a group of about a dozen physicians and research scientists who know about this issue, who feel the same way as I do about it, and are willing to combine their talents and write a scientific paper that hopefully will be accepted in a scientific publication.
Have you had any contact with the gentleman who's running Dr. Martin's lab? There's a gentleman who used to work for Dr. Gallo. My understanding is working for Dr. Martin at the present time.
Zaki Salahut?
Yes, uh-huh.
I personally haven't spoken with Zaki, but Dr. Martin passed all of my information, and including the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, by Zaki, and he said, yes, this is extremely plausible. And really, when you get down to it, Stan, everything makes sense. It makes sense that they had taken these viruses, they mutated them. I mean, this is what they did. We have documentation that shows it. And then this Litton Bionetics, they were the principal. They not only ran the National Cancer Institute Fort Detrick, which is the Biological Testing Center's laboratories, and all of the NCI buildings over there. They administered all the money going through that portion of the NCI. But they also held the contract for providing and supplying all the NCI researchers with all of the cancer viruses and all the monkeys that were used to develop vaccines as well as cancer research experiments. So it makes sense. I mean, we have documented that these researchers were very well aware that their laboratories were contaminated. And laboratory contamination was a major biohazard issue. And what they published was that even 70%, as high as 70% of their monkeys were contaminated with all sorts of viruses, including hepatitis B and every other mutant that they were working with.
Now, for the listener out there who doesn't understand the significance of what Dr. Horowitz is saying, you have to understand that our polio vaccine is grown in the culture of the kidney of the green monkey. So you begin to get infected monkeys, and they get some of these aberrant viruses, or even the simian virus. They know that many of those original cultures were contaminated. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right, Stan.
Right.
And that in Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, I track the most plausible vaccine that gave rise to the AIDS outbreak simultaneously in New York City and Central Africa. And that was not what Dr. Strecker speculated, although I congratulate Dr. Strecker a great deal for doing the work that he did. It was fine, fine work. But he just didn't go a little further. What I found was that it was not the 1978 hepatitis B. It was the pilot studies in 1974 that the FDA had a hand in developing the pilot hepatitis B virus vaccines that were produced partially in chimpanzees. And you probably know, maybe your listeners don't, that the simian immunodeficiency virus from the chimpanzee is the closest thing to the human AIDS virus.
Right.
And, well, at any rate, they had used that vaccine simultaneously in New York as well as Central Africa in 1974.
They used it in 74. You see, the reason I could never accept Strecker was because he said it was in the large-scale hepatitis B that was given in 78, and we knew that in 78 already about 4% of the homosexuals in San Francisco and 6% in New York were already infected, so his timing was off. In other
exactly.
words, and you picked that up as well then.
Exactly.
Okay.
I felt uncomfortable with that from the beginning.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. Now, let's see our listeners out there. First of all, many of them don't know about Dr. Strecker, so would you mind just telling our listeners about Dr. Strecker? And then, what about his brother? What's this strange circumstance about his brother who had worked on the original research with Dr. Strecker's brother? And did he die? Was it a normal death?
Not really. It's interesting. Robert Strecker is a very interesting physician, MD, PhD. His expertise is in internal medicine and pharmacology, and he got involved in researching AIDS because of an insurance company had requested he do that. As make a long story short, he began to suspect that it was a man-made virus of bovine and Visna, sheep Visna virus recombinant background, and his brother was an attorney. And the two of them worked together, and the attorney, Ted Strecker, had gotten a hold through the Freedom of Information Act of that 1970 Department of Defense appropriations request for $10 million for the development of AIDS-like viruses. Well, at any rate, what happened was they began to make a lot of noise. In 1986, they published the Strecker Memorandum, which was a two-hour videotape, which the dentist in Florida got a hold of, and he was livid over it. That's how I became aware of the Strecker material. And then
Now, this is Dr. Acker, who
exactly right.
And Len believes that, and perhaps justifiably so, that Dr. He called it Acker or Acker?
His mother calls it Acker.
Acker. Dr. Acker actually actively infected the other six of his patients, because one of them really didn't even have an invasive procedure. She simply had injection of, local anesthetic. So he had to have contaminated the local anesthetic. And he was a very angry man, and he believed that the government had created this virus, and that's why the homosexuals were dying, and he was going to get back at society.
Exactly.
Incredible. You know, this whole story, you know, it becomes so bizarre, and yet I've studied that whole incident, and I even have Kimberly Bergalis' medical records, which I got from George recently, because of Dr. Duesberg is out there saying, you know, there is no epidemic, and Kimberly was completely healthy before she had her HIV test negated the AZT, and that's what killed her. And the tragedy is there are an awful lot of people across America who believe Dr. Duesberg. But anyway, that's another subject. Go ahead, pick it up from there.
Well, that's a good thing. It's a good place to leave me. I highly suspect that Dr. Duesberg is a disinformation artist.
I think you're exactly right. But what he has done, he has shifted the emphasis of the discussion from why aren't we trying to stop the epidemic or where did it come from to maybe there is no epidemic and this is just a fraud on the part of, scientists to get more money and doctors to make money. And he is so convincing. And believe me, they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars propagandizing and targeting the Christians and conservatives of America so that they've totally neutralized most of them. Most of them are so confused they don't know what's going on. But so that's why I think your work is so vitally important, because, you see, I believe that at least one reason why we're not addressing the epidemic is there are like people who would really love to get the world population down to 2 billion or 1 billion or half a billion, and I even have their writings to say so. But let's pick it up from there.
That's exactly right. Well, what makes me suspect Dr. Duesberg is spreading only disinformation? Well, actually, that's not true. Much of what he's saying has relevance, mm-hmm. and it makes sense. In fact, his basic statement that it is because people are using drugs and having poor lifestyles that they are causing this disease, they're bringing this disease upon themselves, is the same exact argument that the Centers for Disease Control initially lodged when it was still called GRID, gay-related immune deficiency, before AIDS. And at any rate, the bottom line is I found literature that links Dr. Duesberg with the special virus cancer program, which was producing these types of viruses.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Oh, yes, and I published that in the book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola. You see right in front of you, in fact, how much Dr. Duesberg's group was paid for doing this type of work.
Isn't that fascinating?
Well, and more incredible than that, Stan, is I actually dug up through a conference the conversation between Robert Gallo and Peter Duesberg in the early 70s, where they're discussing these things called C-type retroviruses, which AIDS is very much like. In fact, the latest research says that the AIDS virus, human AIDS virus, goes through what's called a C-type transitional period. At any rate, they're talking about the possibilities of using these C-type cancer viruses to induce human cancers. And Gallo says to Duesberg, Peter, do you think if we took these chicken sarcoma leukemia viruses and we mutated them a bit and we then got to basically recombine them so that they could evolve into an envelope that could infect human tissues, do you think we could get this to cause cancer in humans? And Duesberg says, quote, that's absolutely right, end quote.
Okay, fine. Now, but where did they, in other words, I could understand why they were researching to find out if these viruses could create cancers, but that's exactly the opposite of what we have with immune suppression. Cancer cells keep growing, and of course with HIV disease, we have a situation where we destroy the immune system, and they're both retroviruses. So where do you hypothesize they actually created a virus that would do just the opposite of the cancer viruses?
Well, they were studying every aspect of both immunosuppression so that they could induce viruses or actually, and also so that they could reduce rejection of grafts. I mean, this was all part of the NCI research agenda. But also, they were under two different contracts. They were under military contracts for developing immune system destroying agents for germ warfare.
Right.
And they were under cancer research contracts in order, and they had to study what was in vogue, the cancer virus cancer theory. And in doing that, they did a number of things. They became experts in initially developing cancers because they needed to develop cancers in order to study them, in order to see whether these virus particles were associated with the cancers. They became experts, therefore, in creating a numerous types of mutant hybrid viruses. They took, and I published the whole list. The list makes your stomach turn when you look at the list of different virus types that they took. Everything from rabies viruses combined with cat leukemia and chicken sarcoma and mouse leukemia. I mean, you can't, every combination of virus that they could imagine creating, every mutant they created. And then what they did with these is they induced cancers in every animal that you can think of so that they could study it. And they also used these techniques. I mean, I go into detail about the bizarre experiments that they did. They literally used viruses, mutant viruses, for example, like a mouse cat leukemia sarcoma hybrid, in order to detect leukemia viruses in humans suffering from leukemia. So you can't even imagine the studies that they did.
And of course they had lots of money. Now, it was part of their effort to destroy the immune system, a vehicle by which they would be able to do more effective cancer research. In other words, they could get these cancers to grow in all sorts of animals, and then they could study because the immune system will ordinarily tend to destroy the cancers. So was this possibly part of their effort, was to be able to culture cancers better, more efficiently?
That's exactly right.
Okay, so...
And you know what's most interesting is that the principal cancer model that they were using for all of this research, the number one model, was the sarcoma leukemia lymphoma cancer complex.
Now, these were the HTLV-1, HTLV-2 viruses, or was this before Gallo actually described these viruses?
That's what's so suspicious. It was 9 to 10 years before he actually discovered the first leukemia virus, HTLV-1. This was 14 years before he allegedly discovered the first AIDS virus, HTLV-3 or HIV-1.
Right, okay.
And we never had these types of invasive Kaposi sarcoma lesions. We never had them complex as they are today with AIDS, with lymphomas and leukemias. And so, as I look at it, it's like you have to be a fool not to be suspicious.
Let me just run something. This is a little off on the side, but you know, we have the flesh-eating bacteria, which is a group A streptococcus, but the reason it is so virulent today is because the streptococcus has been infected with a virus. Is there anything in your research that might suggest that this was produced experimentally?
Yes, as a matter of fact, this is, I was just researching. I went to Harvard today to dig up some more material, and these things were called phages, bacterial phages, and they were using bacteria to be messengers or envelopes to deliver virus particles, virus DNA and RNA, into different cells of different animals to induce cancers.
That's amazing. You know, I practiced orthopedics for 35 years. I never saw one single case of this what they call necrotizing fasciitis or flesh-eating bacteria. Since I've retired, they've had 3 cases in my community. Now,
sure.
I certainly would have known if they'd been here. So suddenly we're beginning to see this all across America, whereas before we didn't see it. Well, anyway, let's get back. Now, you hypothesized that they actually produced a virus that would destroy the immune system. Do you think that they did this for population control purposes? Do you think that this was an accident? They did it so that they could get the cancers to grow more efficiently, and then somehow this got out into the general population. What is your thought on that?
Well, it's really six of one, half a dozen of the other. I asked the question in the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, was it natural, was it accidental, or was it intentional? And I conclude definitively these are not natural. They came about via laboratory experiments. Now, whether they were released, they broke out accidentally, or released intentionally for population control, I can't conclude definitively, but I lay out all the evidence for both.
Okay.
And there's a tremendous amount of evidence for both.
Well, I think one of the greatest evidence is we're not really trying to stop the epidemic. We're not doing anything that's logical, either in Africa, Asia, or certainly here in the United States. And any time the doctors come out and say, this is what we ought to do, they're the gay activists with their revolutionary friends behind them, jumping up and down saying, you can't do that. You're going to infringe on people's civil rights. So do you have any theories on how the virus got out of the laboratory into these target groups?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
When I tracked it down, as I mentioned, now I tracked it down to the 1974 hepatitis B vaccine studies that were being conducted in New York City by Merck Sharp and Dohme, by New York University Medical Center, another documented biological weapons contractor. Saul Krugman was the director there. He had, since 1965, been inoculating Willowbrook State School mentally retarded children with hepatitis B viruses that were live, that were barely attenuated, barely heat-treated, and that he began in 1973 to work with Robert Purcell from the National Institute of Allergies and Infectious Diseases.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Len Horowitz, Dr. Len Horowitz, and we're talking about his book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, Nature, Accident, or Intentional. Len, how can people get hold of copies of your book?
Well, they can call an 800 number at 1-800-336-9266. That's 1-800-336-9266. Or they can go to any bookstore throughout North America and they can say, I want to order Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola by Dr. Len Horowitz. And I would greatly appreciate it, just like exactly what you're saying. I could use the support, we could all use the support together of telling the bookstore owners, please, to carry the book. And, you know, we're finding that people are doing that, and I greatly appreciate it.
Okay, fine. And let me tell you that Dr. Garth Nicholson, who we've had as a guest on our program, has recommended the book. And, of course, Dr. James Martin, who is a professor at USC, certainly one of the most outstanding professors there. We've had him on the program as well. And both of these men give a great deal of credence to actually what you're hearing tonight. So if you're out there in the audience and you say, this couldn't be true, I mean, this couldn't be a man-made virus, that's just too horrible to contemplate, you really need to get hold of this book. It is quite disturbing, and what frightens me most is I believe that there's a great deal of truth in everything you're hearing tonight. Well, we were talking about these viruses, and you were saying that they were actually giving these viruses to mentally defective children in some institutions?
Yes, that's right, in Willowbrook, on Staten Island in New York.
Okay.
And they then... the Merck Sharp and Dohme finally produced the vaccine, the pilot lots, that they stated contained 200,000 human doses that they planned to test by 1974.
Okay.
And the test sites were in New York City and Central Africa. And most interestingly, those monkeys, that they actually began to grow the viruses in chimpanzees, as well as rhesus monkeys that were littered with monkey virus contaminants.
And you think that they got these contaminants in the laboratories where
that's
they were
exactly
doing these
right.
experiments. Okay, fine.
So it's most plausible that that's how the AIDS epidemic, I mean, the timing is right for that. the circumstances, the logistics, everything. I mean, and it's documented in the scientific literature that this is exactly what happened. So this is my new theory on the origin of AIDS, and as I said, I presented it a couple weeks ago at the 11th International Conference on AIDS, and it's beginning to create quite a scientific stir.
You know, one of the reasons I've always discounted this idea was because it's been said that the virus was present in frozen serum specimens that were in Africa in 1958, but the man who made that statement was none other than Robert Gallo. And of course, it's your contention in this book that Dr. Gallo was responsible for most of these scientific studies.
Yep. And Gallo was actually just reiterating what his other colleague at Harvard, my alma mater, said, Max Essex, who did that study. Actually, he did it, found in 1953 a sample of blood, mm-hmm. allegedly, and later when researchers throughout the world asked Essex to please provide them with this sample of blood so that they could check his science, he lost it. They had held it since 1953, and all of a sudden he lost it. So it was never confirmed. In fact, the fact of the matter is, and this is just published, I was just reading this in Gerald Myers' book, and of course Gerald Myers is an extremely well-respected scientist. He's the head geneticist at the Los Alamos Laboratory for the U.S. government in New Mexico. At any rate, he says that the latest or the earliest documented case of a virus sample, of the AIDS virus sample, is in 1976. That's the earliest.
Really? Now, what's the title of his book?
Well, this is actually in Jay Levy's book. Jay Levy is a very famous researcher.
Right.
He very well esteemed. He was within days of discovering, or actually claiming that he had discovered the AIDS virus as well as Dr. Gallo. This is out of a book called The Retroviridiae, and that's basically the retroviruses, fancy name for retroviruses. And it's a book, it's a scientific book. I'm not sure your listeners would want to read it, but it's by Plenum Press, New York, London. They published in 1992.
And what's this gentleman's name who from Los Alamos?
Los Alamos is Gerald Myers.
Gerald Myers. Okay, fine.
And now his basic thesis is that there had to have been a big bang in the early 1970s. And that's exactly what I'm saying also.
I see. Well, okay, so we get it then in the hepatitis B vaccine that was grown and the polio vaccine that was given. Was this polio vaccine that was given in Africa?
Well, that goes back earlier, and it's good that you brought that up. The early polio vaccines, and even today's current oral polio vaccine, and this is John Martin's area of expertise, today's oral polio vaccine are littered with simian monkey virus contaminants because they never cleaned them up.
And that's the foamy virus that you're speaking of. And, of course, we know the simian virus, S40, was in a lot of the original polio vaccine.
Exactly. And that's where they began. That was one of the first human cancer viruses that they found and suspected was going to be causing cancer in humans, even starting around now. And that's perhaps why we have increasing rates of cancer. But the oral polio vaccine was littered with monkey viruses in the late 50s. In the middle 50s, they began to test these. Then they found them in very late 50s, early 60s, started writing about it. And then, the problem is that the FDA and the pharmaceutical industries have really held back all the information. And one of the things, this coming Labor Day weekend, where there's a national organization called CALL. It stands for Citizens Against Legal Loopholes. And we're going to be having about 20,000 people showing up on the Mall of Washington to protest the disintegration of the U.S. Constitution and human rights. And they've invited me to be one of their 50 speakers. And I'm going to be presenting on how the FDA, how the legal loopholes of the FDA and the pharmaceutical industry, how the pharmaceutical industry has bound and gagged the FDA so much so that they can't even tell the scientific researchers as well as the physicians what truly the risks are associated with the vaccines today that by law we as parents are required to give our children.
Amen to that. Well, there's just so much out there that people need to know. Incidentally, I'm going to be back there. I don't think I'll be speaking, but I'll be back with you at that meeting over the Labor Day meeting. Now, why don't we just we sort of keep going, and I apologize because I'm not letting you really carry through with your ideas, but I'd like to get back to Dr. Strecker, Robert Strecker, and I guess it was Ted Strecker, who were doing the original research suggesting that this was a man-made virus, and perhaps they were a little off on some of their ideas, but what actually happened? I understand that there was some very strange surroundings to the death of Ted Strecker.
Right. Well, they had been petitioning Senator, it was Chicago, Illinois Congressman Huff to begin to bring this out into the open. And he began, and what happened was, according to Robert Strecker, his brother is alleged to have committed suicide. Although Robert Strecker does not feel that his brother was suicidal at that point in time. Moreover, this congressman from Illinois had also been apparently killed through an overdose of cocaine, and he was not a particularly, apparently a heavy user of recreational drugs. So it's highly suspicious. This again goes back to 1986, and that's the story there.
What about William Campbell Douglas, who wrote AIDS, the End of Civilization, or something like that? I understand. Would you ever able to get hold of Dr. Douglas?
You know, I never was able to, although I put through so many calls to who I thought was. Interestingly enough, I had the wrong number. There was another William Campbell Douglas located not far from where he lives.
Okay, and fine. I probably have an idea how to get hold of him, and perhaps off the air we can explore that. We've got Charmaine on the line. Charmaine, did you have a question for Dr. Horwitz?
Yes, sir. I was wondering if he was familiar with Martin Haslam's book called Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus?
Yes, it's Ed Haslam. I spoke to Ed 3 days ago, and it looks like the latest word is God willing, of course. Ed and I are going to team up to do another book.
Well, good. I'm very glad, because I've mentioned that before on the air about all this research and how David Ferry was involved with this, and Mary Sherman was a top oncologist, world-renowned, and she was murdered. And meanwhile, David Ferry in Louisiana had an apartment full of lab rats that he was trying to give cancer to, I think, from monkey viruses, wasn't it?
Right. There was monkey viruses, exactly, that they were using on the rats, and David Ferry was, of course, even in the movie JFK, Oliver Stone shows that he's got monkey rat cages and mice cages all over his apartment.
That's right, but in actuality, he had a separate apartment for all of this.
Yep. That's true.
Well, okay.
Very good. I'm glad that this is finally coming up, because I've long believed that there was something real fishy about this AIDS virus, and it just didn't crawl over here from Haiti.
I think you're absolutely right. A lot of monkey business going on.
Yes, sir. God bless you, Dr. Stan.
God bless you, too.
And you too, sir.
You know, do you mind if we talk a little bit about this New World Order thing, Stan?
No, go right
really
ahead.
Relates.
Okay, go ahead.
Interestingly, I told you that it was Henry Kissinger who selected the option of developing these agents for germ warfare.
Right.
Now, it was interesting when I researched Kissinger and what his involvements were, links to the Central Intelligence Agency. See, the U.S. biological weapons industry evolved directly from Hitler's top scientists. In fact, it was Eric Traub that was brought over under what was called Project Paperclip, directly from post-war Germany, and it was actually Henry Kissinger who was the chief Nazi hunter for American intelligence over in Germany. He was working as General Bolling, who's the godfather for the Joint Intelligence Commission. He was his interpreter. Kissinger was his interpreter, and he was his right-hand man, and he was the chief Nazi hunter, training all the other American intelligence agents to scout out and find the ultimately 2,000 Nazis that they imported to America via the Rat Line and via Project Paperclip. And interestingly enough, the New World Order, I don't know how many people know this, but it is the contemporary evolution of that New World Order from ancient, from the military industrialists that go back even as to the Crusades, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta and other groups. The contemporary plan was laid out in Henry Kissinger's 1955 Harvard PhD thesis called The Meaning of History, where he says we can never have peace on earth. All we can do is have an alignment, minimize the wars by creating small wars around the planet on a continuing basis, and therefore keep the alignment of economic powers in place. And it's interesting, when you begin to see that this is a kind of like a white supremacist and clearly evil and totally distorted mentality that is involved in this whole thing. And it's actually Hitler's people that came over here that began this whole industry. It's really not surprising that the concept of it being intentional population control comes up.
And, of course, we're allowing it to kill off the blacks in Africa and the dark-skinned people in India, and yet each one is a unique human being created
exactly.
In the likeness of God. But there is this elitist attitude, and for any of our listeners that have any question about this, we'd be glad to document exactly what Len is saying. There is an elitist attitude that wants an Anglo-Saxon elite to rule the world, and I happen to be Anglo-Saxon, but I don't go along with it at all. Let's go to Dudley here quickly. Dudley, I have a question or comment.
Just a quick question. I was wondering to us laymen, how did the virus jump from the laboratory to the people and to Africa? Was it through inoculation or what?
Yes, they used what was called a jet gun. It was looked like a gun, a big metal gun that contained a cartridge of vaccine, and they lined up the black Africans, maybe 100, 200 in a line, and they just went bang, 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 right into the arms of these people.
But you feel that actually it was because this was grown in the culture of the kidney of the green monkey, that's where they got it, or the rhesus monkey or the chimpanzee?
Exactly. And see, the bioweapons laboratories at Litton Bionetics was in charge of not only developing immune system destroying agents for germ warfare, they were in charge of sending out the monkeys to the vaccine producers that produced these vaccines.
And
those monkeys were fully contaminated with everything under the sun. And so it's not, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to conclude that it's most plausible. I mean, and the research literature is full of studies that show that these monkeys were fully contaminated with all sorts of immune system destroying and cancer causing viruses.
But you see, Dudley, initially we didn't think that many of these things, or at least this is the rationale, they knew there were retroviruses there, but they didn't think that they would jump the species barrier. Now, that may be the explanation. Maybe there's some people there who knew that they could, but we don't know what was going on in their mind. But we do know that the original kidney cultures that were used were contaminated with retroviruses.
And this virus was to protect the people from what?
Well, there were a variety of different types of virus vaccines that they had developed, from measles, mumps, rubella, smallpox, everything that, every virus like polio that you can think of.
But there was primarily this one that you were talking about was for polio and for hepatitis B, weren't they?
Right.
Right.
Those are the ones that are the most suspected.
Was that the same thing for New York City, too?
That's correct. And that's what makes it so almost obvious. They did that simultaneously in New York City and Central Africa between 1972 and 1974, and all of a sudden, 4, 5, 6 years later, you had the first cases of AIDS.
And, of course, you had the most of it in New York City, and then, of course, in San Francisco, because the homosexuals were traveling back and forth across the country. If this is true, it certainly would explain why you got the pattern. such as has occurred.
Right. It makes total sense. My theory makes the epidemiology, the unique epidemiology, that is the unique sudden big bang on two far removed continents. It's the only thing that makes sense.
And it's certainly the time frame is much better than Dr. Strecker's theory or many of the other theories we've heard. Anything else, Dudley?
Well, it's also for the homosexual population.
Sure. And, of course, the homosexual population feels that, you know, that they were targeted, which may well explain why Dr. Aker was so angry. And a lot of homosexuals who believe nobody really cares because they're dying.
The other thing was, if your guest could briefly explain all his academic credentials.
I'm sorry?
He wants to know your academic credentials.
Oh, certainly.
Can you hold just a minute? We're going to have to take our break. Hang on there, Dudley. But I just want to mention, if you'd like to get a copy of this book, Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, by Len Horowitz, you can call 1-800-336-9266. Or you can go into your local bookstore and ask them to carry Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, just to tell them they ought to have it on hand. It's a fascinating book. I certainly recommend it strongly to you. Dudley, who's a regular caller here, wants to know what your background, what your scientific background is.
Sure. My best credential is I have two beautiful little girls. How's that? as far as academic background, I have a doctor of medical dentistry from Tufts Dental School. And I then got my master's in public health from Harvard. And then I got another master's degree in health education and healthy human development. And I was almost real close at the University of Rochester. I was within 2 months of getting another master's degree in science, in dental sciences. And as I said, I began investigating the Florida dental AIDS tragedy. I was on assignment. And I fell into the government cover-up in that case, and then I began investigating the document that Dr. Stan had mentioned that came from Dr. Robert Strecker. And that's where I am. 3 years later, I've written the book Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, and I'm talking to Stan on radio. What do you think of that?
Anything else, Dudley?
Well, when you were on assignment, does that mean you were who was paying you or somebody?
I was being paid by the largest dental and medical catalog supply company actually in the world, a company by the name of Henry Schein Company. They also produce Schein Pharmaceuticals.
Right. Okay, Dudley, we got to run because we've got Dr. Norris on the other line. Hi, Barry.
Hi, greeting, and thank you very much. This was very informative, Dr. Horowitz. I really appreciate your work.
Thank you.
A quick comment and then a question. In addition to having a medical degree, I have a master's degree in epidemiology, and part of my master's work in 1977, I was over in Kenya studying maternal malnutrition and the effect on the infant immune system. At that time, we ran a little clinic, and we were diagnosing quite a few number of cases of polio over there in children that had been previously immunized from polio, and we figured that they had centralized their health resources in Kenyatta Hospital in Nairobi, and they didn't even have refrigerators out in the clinic, and they were shipping all of this free vaccine from the World Health Organization out there, but it wasn't even refrigerated once it got out in the field. And I had kind of wondered if this had could explain some of this epidemic, perhaps that they some of the needles were being diverted, maybe using contaminated needles in administering these vaccines. But this simultaneous outbreak in New York seems to put the kibosh on that.
Yep.
Well, we're just about out of time, Barry. Quick question.
Quick question. An obvious question. Are there any specimens left of the original vaccine?
Very important question. That's one of the things. We hope that there are. Supposedly, they're on in storage at the FDA, and part of the political action that we're asking listeners and all the people that are going to be gathering at the Washington meeting to do is to contact their legislators and urge them to bring up a congressional investigation into this affair, as well as to analyze the vaccines lots for these types of contaminants.
I think that's really so important. I suspect, though, that that'll end up with a probably shredded like a lot of the other things, because I believe that if this is ever brought out, people will be marching in the streets demanding, that the people who covered this up certainly be brought before the bar of justice.
Yep, I agree.
And Len, it's been a fascinating hour. I want to thank you so much, and I hope we can get together with you perhaps some other time. We can do repeat of this on our afternoon program with a much different audience. But this has been a fascinating hour. Keep up the good work, and I'll be calling you off the air, because I've been fascinated by this for a long time, and I just like to see what you're coming up with.
Great, Dr. Stan. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you. Good
night. Pleasure to be with you again.
God bless you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This concludes Side 2. If you'd like a list of other tapes available by Dr. Stanley Monteith, just write to Radio Liberty at P.O. Box 13. That's P.O. Box 13, Santa Cruz, California, zip 95063. God bless you now. Goodbye.